Hello, everybody. Welcome to the meeting of the Expanded Budget Committee for Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee for 2020, April 28th, 2020. This is a special session where we are going to be looking at quite a lot of information, and Jason Molina is going to run the show. We're happy that you're all here. I think we've got Kathy. Should we take a roll call of who's here?
No, I don't think that's necessary, but I am recording them.
Okay. All right. Very good. Can everybody hear? And you might notice I'm not in the same place as usual. I'm stealing the Wi-Fi off of Cornell at my husband's office so that I don't get bumped off of this call. So I just wanted to welcome you. This is really going to be an unusual retreat. This is not the typical situation we find ourselves in where we can, with any kind of confidence, set a budget target for 2021. In fact, a lot of what we're going to be talking about today is the budget of 2020 and how we deal with the current year budget. This, the context being that we are still hoping and lobbying and working very hard to try to get federal money that would support state and local governments. That has not been forthcoming, and it now appears it'll be a fairly difficult battle and particularly a partisan battle, I'm afraid. But we are looking for not past support for any kind of past policy decisions or mismanagement, but for the amazingly big dip in our revenues that is happening right now with the shutdown and the additional expenses because of the shutdown, because of the pandemic. So this is a situation none of us has ever seen, this country hasn't seen in 100 years. We do hope that we will get federal support, but we have to plan as if we will not. And that's the situation we are in. The governor, as most people know, and I'm kind of explaining this a little bit for the public's sake, the governor has negotiated with the state legislature that this year he will have three bites at the apple to actually rewrite the state budget, frankly, April 30th, June 30th, and December 31st, when he will have the opportunity to make cuts in any area of the state budget, and since a very significant amount of our money comes in as reimbursements for work that we do for the state, we are certainly going to be experiencing cuts from the state budget. He's projecting right now about a $13.5 billion gap for this year, so we know that will come down to us. So I think that's as much time as I'd like to take with an introduction, but I did want to put this into a little bit of context. And from here, turn it over to Jason Molina. Thank you very much, Jason, for not only running an emergency operations center, a county in an emergency situation like we've never seen, helping to draw together partners from across the community, across the county and state, and inspiring our staff to do amazing things on behalf of our residents. We're deeply grateful to you and everybody on the staff who has pulled together in this time and made sacrifices and worked incredibly long hours and done things we never expected 8 weeks ago would ever be on our plate. So from all of us, thank you very, very much, take it away.
All right. Thank you very much, Martha. Can everybody hear me okay? Yes? No, everybody clear? Good. Thank you for that. You know, I appreciate the compliment, but the truth is that we have a great group of people that have really made the success of trying to weather this pandemic happen. That's, you know, people like Amy, like Frank, like Lisa, Jay, all the folks at the EOC, all the workers that we have, you know, the employees, they've been really the ones that have made it all happen. So I appreciate the compliment. The compliment really goes to them and the support the legislature's had throughout all this. It's a very difficult time. very challenging to understand what direction to go in, and the legislature's been more than supportive to all of us, and we greatly appreciate that, so thank you. I'm gonna put the slide up and share it with everyone if that works for you. And we'll start getting right into it, and then I'll give a little bit of an intro. Okay.
Jason, if I can hold on. Do we? I just saw on chat, are Anna and Leslin? Oh, I don't see them on the list. Is there?
No, they haven't come in yet.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Hey, can everybody see that? Is that working? Did everybody see the change in slide?
Yes.
Okay, good to go. All right. So I'll start, and I'll start on two notions. One is, Martha, you already said that this is not a typical budget retreat. Although I only have two under my belt, it's not a typical situation where we would be recommending some foresight to what we think is going to happen in 2021 and ask for your guidance and support in setting a fiscal target. Unfortunately, we're in a situation where we're really doing a mid-year review and to a certain extent really looking at the current budget, scrubbing parts of it, and trying to understand what's the impact in totality to the county, just the county budget. And that's a small piece of the bigger impact to the community from the coronavirus crisis and pandemic. I'll say this, generally speaking, I usually have a lot more confidence and security when I do financial analysis and present them. I don't have as much confidence in this circumstance, not because I'm not familiar with financial crises, but because the ability to predict based on the typical systems and approaches that we would normally do to predict outcomes is not as relevant as it is in the past, meaning the ability to forecast what will happen in the economy and ultimately what will happen with our budget is so unknown and uncertain. It creates a very, very concerning and insecure situation when we look at what is going to happen in the future. So while I'm familiar and comfort in doing financial forecasting and projecting and have been in financial crises, I have not been in one quite like this, nor has anybody else. So if we have any comfort, it's that we're all in the same position. That said, what we've done over the past few weeks is we've been able to take the information that we know today, and I say that because what we knew a week ago is different than we know today, and we have tried our best to project what we think will happen in the future. And understanding that this is probably a working and fluid model with the expectation that there will be some level of financial updating on a monthly basis to the Budget Capital Personnel Committee and probably the legislature as we go month to month and learn new things and ultimately see what it means and what a reopening of the community means from an economic and a budget perspective. So this is very much a fluid discussion that will happen consistently throughout this year as we go to set, and ultimately we'll set 2021 budget. But before we get to that point, we're going to have to make some mid-year course corrections, so to speak. And the challenge with that is we don't know, we can't look too far ahead to make those decisions because things are changing constantly, which seems to be a common theme as we go through this. So a little bit of set the stage, because this is not an isolated or regionalized crisis and impact. It is state, it's nationwide, it is global. So impacts that we know today with respect to COVID-19 impact on New York State. Now, this comes from the New York State Division of Budget, but right now they are forecasting about a $13.3 billion tax revenue shortfall this year. I think, Martha, you mentioned that. That's what NYSAC has been telling us, between 10 to 15 billion. So 13 billion seems to be close enough right now. Still preliminary, obviously, depending on how things turn around. The impact, total impact on the New York State economy, when they look at loss, growth, and then what it would take to fully recover, you're talking almost a half a trillion dollars of loss to New York State's economy, which is significant. These are statistics that came out of a preliminary economic impact assessment that the Department of Vision presented, but the impact is significantly greater than 9/11 and the 2008 Great Recession with respect to GDP loss. 9/11 was around 2%. The Great Recession is about 10. This is upwards of 14 or more percent, and that's, again, is still preliminary. Everything that we've been looking at right now is you're talking about a possible slow recovery starting at the end of this calendar year, where you might see a pre-COVID level recovery by the first quarter of 2023. That is, you know, 2.5 plus years away. And obviously, the economic impact is widespread. There is nobody that is immune from this, so to speak, no pun intended. And it's impacting all industries in the state and the region, and it's impacting all areas of New York State, whether it's the North Country, whether it's the Montauk and Long Island, or whether it's Buffalo. We're all being negatively impacted by this. So that kind of sets a little bit of a stage I thought it was important to talk about. If you want a much more in-depth economic impact, I encourage you to read this this slide. It's about 45 slides put together by the Boston Group, the consulting firm. It's pretty in-depth. It gets really detailed, but it gives you a good bit of context.
Hey, Jason?
Yeah?
Question before you move on. The people have been asking me questions of the economic impact on property values.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering has that been factored into 2.5 years? Because when they go down, they can't go back up to where they were immediately. It will take years, I would think, for that value to come up. So is that the estimate you're saying, 2.5 years?
The 2.5 year estimate is based off of the report where they're talking about most of the different industries being able to recover to pre-COVID levels. So some industries, like right now, they're estimating that the restaurant industry may not get back to pre-COVID levels to 2024 and beyond, where some other industries may recover beyond that. There wasn't anything specific about real property values, but real property values up going, you know, changing up and down will be a direct descendant of what happens with industry recovery. So, for example, commercial values will go up, down, or stay stagnant depending on the income they generate. So there's a direct correlation to that. I think it's too early to tell what's going to happen with property values. We're going to have to see how this summer goes, and you'll see how the market in this area reacts. I will say that's probably something that will be much more localized based on your local economy in terms of your local real estate market.
Before you restart, Jason, I should have said that at the end of this end of our presentation and discussion, I'll be asking for an executive session to talk about personnel matters. I think if folks could hold questions, unless there's something where you literally don't understand something that's on a slide or that Jason's just said, but make notes of your questions for discussion, and let's let Jason go through.
Sure.
Slides. Thanks.
No problem. Yep. So economic and fiscal indicators. So some of these slides you're going to recognize because we talk about them every year. And part of the reason I went back and used some of them and updated them is because there isn't any new relevant information. If we were to take them at face value, we would say there's nothing wrong, which kind of talks about the scarcity of real-time information and difficulty of being able to get information. So, for example, here's a slide that we typically use. It talks about the unemployment rate, which remained low in 2019, partially because unemployment rates are not updated as of the past 5 to 6 weeks. There used to be more data collected. But as you can see, this tells two stories. One, you can see how we've improved since the 2008 recession. Unemployment has gone down. It speaks to an element or a strength of our local economy. And typically, Tompkins County has a lower unemployment rate than the Southern Tier or New York State. And that was held true all the way through to 2019. Here's a little bit of an opposite showing of these numbers. Here's an example of over the same last five-week period of time, which is March 16th to April 19th, the percentage increase in unemployment claims. Tompkins County had a 3,000% increase in unemployment claims. New York State, a 2,100% increase in unemployment claims. And the Southern Tier as a whole, a 1,300% increase in unemployment claims. So obviously, this slide tells a different story than this slide. And the reason that I brought this up is that the information is changing It's so fresh that it's hard to understand exactly what's going on in real-time circumstances. So the last 5 weeks is an indicator that unemployment claims, and we've been seeing it all over the country, all over the state, unemployment claims have reached, have skyrocketed and surpassed any recession in recent time in terms of the number of people filing for unemployment claims. In general, obviously, folks that are not employed or have less income coming in is going to translate into less sales, less revenue generated, less purchasing of goods and services, et cetera, et cetera. There's a direct correlation to individuals' wealth and income. So obviously, just seeing such a huge spike in unemployment claims is nothing that we like to see, and this is an unprecedented spike over the past 5 week period of time. Again, inflationary rate, generally inflationary rates, rates between 2% or around 2% are positive. As you can see, there hasn't been any hyperinflation or deflation, although there is concern of the long-term impacts of what this crisis could have. Right now, inflationary rate is at a point where it seems to be good, and prices of goods seem to be keeping up. This is something that I've shown in the past. Again, U.S. consumer confidence over the past 2 years. Confidence dropped suddenly when the shutdown issues were ordered. This is right around here, at the beginning of March. Consumer confidence will play an important part of the economy restart. And I'll say that also, if I talk a little bit later, is that will also be dependent on the community's ability to open up successfully. So if there is a lot of regression or if someone opens up too quickly, trust is broken, consumer confidence will not come back. People will be concerned about their health. So there's a balance of reopening the community and economic needs, and trying to find that right balance is, I think, something that we're all trying to struggle with in terms of a country and society. Dow Jones, again, I've shown you this before, straight 11 years of what we would consider a bull market or a relatively bull market. And then within a one-week period of time, you had the largest single-day drop and the longest and the largest single-day gain in market history. To speak about the volatility and the disruption that the coronavirus has played in our national economy and international economy. It just speaks to the volatility and the instability of it, what this has caused in terms of instability. Generally speaking, though, this type of growth would be a positive thing, and it would show some stability of our economy to be able to recover. I hope that's the case. These are slides that we've shown before around TANF and safety net. Unfortunately, I have very little accurate information. I'll show you some in a little bit about what March meant. But in general, we talk about TANF. Remember, TANF is the federal benefit, five-year limit, a lifetime limit. Then people are shifted over to safety net in terms of assistance. TANF has been going down over the past 10, 12 years. As people are shifting off of TANF, they're shifting over to safety net. You can see a 15% increase in safety net compared to the total assistance. That means that folks are shifting from, some folks are shifting from safety net to TANF, and there's a clear shift of that. Again, TANF, there's no local cost right here. Safety net, there's a 70-30 local cost to the state. SNAP cases. This is usually a good determination when you see a spike in SNAP cases as to whether or not there's hardship being felt. So we show the gradual decline of SNAP cases since 2014, still higher, though, than the pre-recession days of 2008. This doesn't tell me much because January of 20 is the most recent data we have from the state. So I asked Kit, Tom, and Dita to give you some other information to talk about applications. We probably won't see the actual impact until late April, early March, as the folks have filed, but when I look at the number of March 2020 applications for SNAP and HEAP compared to 2019, there's 185% jump in applications in March and SNAP, as well as HEAP. HEAP also covers utility bills for individuals in need. So this is an indicator, again, that there's more people in need. I think all things we conceptually knew, this is just putting some support behind it between this and the unemployment numbers. Okay. So that kind of lays a little bit of groundwork. I showed just a brief overview of impacts the state are seeing and analyzing, a brief overview of us in terms of some of the general indicators that would suggest changes in our economy. Again, not a lot of specific information. We've only been in this for about 5 to 6 weeks. And even to get real-time sales tax information is very difficult. But what we're going to do is take a stab at the information we know and how we can, and how we're going to put that into a model to be able to project what we think will happen. Having gone through several financial crises in the past, what's important is that we will revisit this on a regular basis and update those projections. And that's what's going to be important. And we can make those corrections as we go through this on a month-to-month basis as we learn new information. That'll be an important part of monitoring the impacts of the crisis, monitoring the economy and how it begins to restart itself, and monitoring how reopening the community impacts all of it. So here are some basic, you're probably familiar with these general fund revenues. For the most part, these are all the general fund revenues by basic categories, like rollover, federal aid, local revenues, other revenues, state aid, unallocated revenue, and real property taxes. So what we did here is, and I'll get into these three, which are the three biggest ones. We, Kevin, myself, Rick, the department heads spent the past week and a half to 2 weeks digging into these different revenue lines and trying to understand what we would know today and how we think they might be impacted. Very difficult. Also, another wrench into things, which we've never really dealt with, is that there can be mid-year adjustments coming from New York State. Obviously, the governor, as Martha said, the governor has three opportunities, kind of the bite at the apple three separate times to change financial aid or change aids to municipalities, which includes counties. And based on a $13 billion deficit, NYSAC has suggested that you should probably brace yourself for a 10 to 15% reduction of state aid. So we looked at state aid. So what we did, and what we also don't have here, is there's back, you know, there's multiple queries and spreadsheets of different revenue lines in different departments that departments have gone through and done a precursor to review that ultimately combined into this type of shortfall. So right now in the general fund, as it is today, is we're projecting about $11 million shortfall in revenue. Just for discussion purposes, I would take a million up and a million down and give you your range from a $10 to $12 million range right now. One thing we don't know anything about right now, and Rick and I have talked briefly about it, we'll talk some more, is what's going to be the impact here? So generally, you know, when we issue property taxes or property tax bills, people pay their property taxes. If they don't pay them, it usually goes through a foreclosure process. It's too early to tell what type of impact this has had on people or delinquent property tax payments. So we'll know that in the next upcoming months. But generally speaking, we're made whole on this number. We either, the property taxes are either paid or we end up foreclosing our properties. Now, we don't foreclose on a lot of properties in this, from the county's perspective, which is a sign and an indicator of a strong real estate market. About 40 to 50% of your property owners pay property taxes through an escrow account for a mortgage. So when I pay my mortgage payment, I pay my lender. The lender then pays my taxes. That's how it's paid. So if I begin to become delinquent on a mortgage payment to my lender, generally speaking, the lender still pays the property taxes. If that's how people have their property taxes triggered, which most people do. In those instances, we would continue to be paid property taxes while the lender, who would, you know, have first position over the property, would deal with the property owner and dealing with those delinquent mortgage payments. My point being is that a good portion of our property taxes are going to be paid through escrow. We won't see that delinquency if it takes place. On the other hand, the other half, we don't know. So it's too early to tell if we're going to get hit in this area or not, but we'll be looking at it over the next several months. So I don't speak to this in this discussion right now. If I take some of these, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take these three major ones here, local revenues, state aid, and unallocated revenue, and I'm going to go through them a little bit. So here we have local revenue. Local revenue is a variety of different types of revenues. It's not necessarily state aid. A lot of it is billable services. It could be, as you can see here, a reduction of mental health clinic revenue. We're expecting a reduction of mental health clinic revenue primarily because of the restart and now the transfer from in-person patient services to telemedicine. There's still an uptick, a restart of that. It's unknown at this point in time how much of an impact the loss of the 2 or 3 weeks that we had prior to getting started up will have. We also don't know how the market will respond to doing a different type of mental health services and different types of clients and how they may respond to it. So right now we're estimating a shortcoming in some of those revenues. Also, some of this I've got, no, this is not state aid, I'm sorry. Next slide. Some preschool revenues, a reduction in preschool special ed revenues. Also, there should probably be some level of equalizing decreasing expenses, but it's too hard to tell. And we also have some reduction in clerk fees. This is a series of fees related around real estate transactions. While there is an uptick right now in refinancing because of interest rates being so low, I think it's probably too early to tell whether or not there is a slowdown in the real estate market right now. I think it's too hard to tell if it's how long it's going to last or how much it's going to last with respect to real estate transactions. State aid. What we did is we basically did a query and identified all of the state aid we received, which right now is about $42, $43 million. And there were certain provisions that the budget outlines what state aid can't be touched. One of it is direct payments to individuals. So if there are direct benefactors or the direct payments of individuals, though that type of state aid, which usually passes surplus right to an individual, will not be impacted. However, other state aid can be impacted. Not knowing where that's going to go, we took an across-the-board cut of 15% of state aid to start with the reduction discussion as to what that might mean. Now, the governor can take more from one area and less from another. It could be capital, so it could be CHIPS. It could be aid that we get through social services. We don't know what that's going to be yet, but we did take an across-the-board cut of 15% of state aid to put a placeholder to understand what that impact would be. The reason this is 9 is because not all of this revenue is cuttable, for the lack of a better term, right? Like I just said, some of this aid can't be cut based on the parameters. So that's why this number is a little bit less than 15%.
You mean that's 9 is the 3.8 million is 9% of 42 million, but it's 15% when you take
50% of cuttable state aid, right? State aid that could be vulnerable to being taken, but it's not all of it. No, not all the aid under here is subject to it.
Got it.
Unallocated revenue. This is generally the one where there's most flexibility, or not flexibility, but I would say elasticity. These are a lot of different taxes and revenues. The big one is sales tax. I actually have another slide on sales tax, and I'll show you how we came to some projections in that. But I will tell you, NYSAC put out a decent report. We can make sure everybody sees it, where they referenced an Office of Management Budget, a federal OMB report, that did us a few scenarios on large pandemics throughout the country and what that would mean to GDP. They then translated it and said, counties could see anywhere between a 4% to a 13% or 14% reduction in sales tax. So when we look at that report and we came up with around a 15%, we don't think we're far off, at least at this stage of the game. And I'll go through the process we did to try to estimate and project what we think that's going to be. We are a reduction in interest and penalties. So this is about a $900,000 revenue. We're expecting some reduction. Interest and penalties, that would be interest and penalties of people paying taxes, property taxes. It's already at a reduction for whatever reason compared to this time last year. We're not 100% sure as to why, but we think that's going to continue. This is room tax, so there's a small portion of room tax that is unallocated revenue. In general, our planning staff have been talking with HED and the STPV. They're seeing roughly a 30% decrease in revenue right now. I think one of your hardest hit industries and everything we've been reading, and the one that's going to get hit one of the hardest and the longest to recover is going to be your tourism, your travel accommodations, your restaurant industry area. And room tax falls in obviously that arena. Detransfer, again, this has to do with revenues generated through real estate transactions. We think there's going to be a little decrease in that right now. And then also here we have right here, 70% reduction in casino revenue. So we did receive the first quarter payment for casino revenue. It came in at about 24% of the total amount we budgeted. Assuming casinos probably aren't going to be the first business to open up, just by the nature of them sitting shoulder to shoulder, touching every machine. I would imagine their protocols and practices that they're going to have to implement are going to be a little different than an office setting, so to speak. So I'm not banking on the casinos opening up. Again, it could change. Who knows? Also, even if they do open up, you're talking about if I reflect back on the unemployment numbers, you're having less people with less income. Could impact their discretionary spending. All in all, we have about a $6.2 million shortfall in unallocated revenue. So here's the sales tax projections. What we did is there are nationally accepted and nationally categorized taxable sale sectors, right? And this is the way taxable sales are categorized. And we have several data points that have just recently actually been opened up to us over the past several years. They weren't available 5 years ago, where the Department of Taxation and Finance actually lists on their website data sets going back, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years, Kev? Yeah. 8 years of every county's sales tax revenue generated by category. So Kevin worked his magic and was able to extract some of that data and created a master spreadsheet in which we took the top 15 sales tax sectors, right, that makes up sales tax in our community, in Tompkins County. And it's pretty consistent, the same 15 over years back, and that makes up about 70% of the Tompkins County sales tax revenue. The other 30 is kind of lumped together in this other category. And we took these sectors, and long story short, what we did is we panned them out. We then divided the 2019 sales tax numbers and divided them by the percentage representation of each sector. So we guesstimated if restaurants and eating places is 10% of our sales tax, we then divided it up, that amount of receipts in 2019 by this percentage and this percentage and this percentage, and so on and so forth. So that we could roughly determine where the weighted categories were by sector that make up our sales tax. And then we scanned out for the remaining 9 months of the year, April through December. And then we did some, as best research as we could in a week's time frame, in each one of these industries to see what, if any, information we could extract about how they were going to perform for the remainder of the year, or at the very best, the next several months. And you got some interesting information when you spend a little bit of time researching these sectors. So, for example, traveler accommodations, don't think that's going to recover anytime soon, all right? And we actually did get some interesting data that looked out, forecasting out to the rest of the year, and it's still well below 19 sales. Restaurants and eating places, again, this is our number one performer in our county, probably not going to recover very well. Automobile dealers, when they're not open, again, another challenging one, right? Beer, wine, and liquor stores, believe it or not, have done very well during this because all the bars are closed, right? So their actually sales have grown pretty significantly. And grocery stores are seeing some positive growth, maybe a little out of ordinary growth. Gasoline stations, not only are people not driving combustion engine vehicles, there are also gas prices have plummeted, so you get whacked in the dough. So we took some broad estimates based on some research that we did in every sector and plugged in either growth or or declining sales compared to 2019 for every month as we went out. And then we assembled that information per month and came up with about a 15% reduction over the 2019 sales, and that's how we came to the number that we came to, which was roughly about 5.6, 5.7. Now, obviously, the nice thing about this is we can now reflect on when Rick gives his report in May, we can see what April was and see how far off were our projections, and then we can tweak it as we learn more about each industry, and as the community starts to reopen, we can adjust those industries depending on how they respond. There is no good way to do this. I've talked with a lot of colleagues across the state. They thought this was probably the more granular way of approaching it. There isn't any textbook play to do it, and we don't get detailed information from the state on sales tax in our community. Now, we do have the ability to report some special reports that we have done that may give us more information about, I think, different establishments in different categories here. So we're trying to get more information, and NYSEC has been advocating Tax and Finance Office to give us more real-time information so we can make these decisions and estimates. But right now, this is about the best we can approach to do a guess. And 15% reduction is around what NYSEC's analysis of the federal pandemic study portrayed. So, you know, if we were 30% or we were at 2% and we were well off that, we have two data points now that suggest around the same number for now. So the reason we spend a lot more time on sales tax is because it's the largest single chunk of what's just about half, a little less than half of the decrease in projected revenue. Everybody still with me? Good? All right.
Yeah, and Jason, this is nothing about 2021. This is just from now through to the total of 2020. Right?
Correct. This is just 2020. Right now we're expecting between a $10 and $12 million shortfall in revenue for 2020. So when we started, when we really got into things about mid-March, I issued two directives, and it was a hiring freeze and a spending freeze. And that was understanding that when the economy shut down and the community shut down, that we were going to have a ripple effect, which we're starting to see. So what we did at the same point in time when the department heads reviewed the revenue numbers, we said we need you to also look at your expense numbers, and I need you to curl back some things and curtail things. I need you to take a reasonable eye at expenditure reductions and try to determine what are some things that we can forego, postpone, not do, so on and so forth, as well as holding a lock on those vacant positions. So here are some categories of expense reductions. Again, there is elongated backgrounds to each one of these categories, but I'm going to go through them, explain a little bit, and then talk about what it means in general. Right here, position vacancies. So right now we have about 32 vacant positions in the organization, about total of 770 FTEs in total. These are 32. These are all, for the most part, full-time positions, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. There might be a few straggler part-times out there, but these are 32 full-time positions spread across 15 different departments. So what we did is we tallied all of them up. We identified them. We confirmed that. Some of them have been vacant all year because at the beginning of the year, some of them might have been vacant from last year. Some of them become vacant between the beginning of the year and now. And then we computed, and by we, I mean Lisa. I had very little. She did the bulk of the work behind it. She then took all the positions and said, how many weeks, if we did not fill this position based on pay, based on Social Security payments, based on retirement payments, what would be the savings that we would achieve if the position remained vacant? We then went through that list again with department heads and talked about what can we continue to keep vacant, and if there's something that is not that you want to try to fill, let's talk about why. Let's talk about if it's relevant. So there were four positions that we looked at filling mid-year. One is the HR commissioner, one is the deputy commissioner of mental health, one is the director of clinical services and mental health. What's the fourth one, do you remember?
Deputy workforce director
was the fourth one, that's right. And we calculated when we thought those positions would be filled, which was sometime between June and September, depending on the position. We calculated the savings prior to that and put this in part of the number. So here we have roughly about $2.2 million. A little of it is a one-time position. This is actually the Chief Equity and Diversity Officer. What we're going to suggest is we postpone the hiring of that to the next budget year. But roughly this is the largest savings that we could have by keeping these 32 positions vacant. That's roughly about 4.7 or 5% of the workforce. The next came expenditure reduction, so anywhere from equipment to vehicles to different programs, such as, for example, any grant programs that we administer. This is kind of a variety of different things that we think could be postponed and put off at least till next year to figure out what to do next year. For example, we have vehicles here. There are some small equipment and furniture replacements in certain departments here. The Municipal Parks and Trail Grant, the Municipal Affording Infrastructure Grant, and the Stream Corridor Restoration Program, these are all grants that we think can be postponed and put off until next year. The hiring of seasonal workers, the public works apprenticeship, and some project assistance. These are additional personnel. Save from jail board outs. Obviously,
one of the success stories right now is we have vacancies up at the jail. So obviously we don't think there'll be any board outs or very few board outs. And then there are three OTRs that are in contingency that we don't think we should move forward on. That's the contribution to the LEAD program, the landlord liaison, and the purchase of the CCE van. This all equals into about just under $1 million worth of savings. This is stuff that we think could be postponed or rediscussed, so to speak, in the next year's budget. The next thing comes in agency contracts. There's probably over $5 million worth of agency contracts with a variety of different agencies. These are what we would consider sponsored agencies. For the most part, agencies, a lot that work with or work through the Human Service Coalition, including things like the Tompkins County Public Library. So about over the past week and a half, I worked with Kathy Slaughter, and I did email the legislature a list of questions that I wanted her to ask those supporting the sponsored agencies. I also took on some of those other agencies as well, some of the larger ones that don't work through the Human Service Coalition, to ask a series of questions, understand some information. A lot of the agencies, the vast majority of them, had not begun to think about or are not quite sure what to do quite yet with respect to things. But as we go through that, we also ask questions of what would you do with a 25% reduction in your third quarter payment. So the way we pay these agencies is when the budget is adopted, we provide four installments of the contract that we have with them. And the contract is usually made up of one of two things, or both. It's the target that we give them regularly, and two, any one-time OTR that's wrapped into one contract, and then we divide it into four pieces and then pay them quarterly. What I'm recommending here is that we reduce the third quarter payment, which would go out in July, reduce the third quarter payment by 25%. Why across the board? Because I don't think we're really in a position, at least I'm not in a position right now, to tell you that this agency shouldn't get cut and that agency should get more money and vice versa. I think at this stage of the game, when we're looking at reductions across the board with our own organization, it's fair and reasonable to ask any of the contracting agencies that we have to also reduce, to expect a similar type of reduction. So what this would be a reduction in third quarter payments to all sponsored agencies, quarterly payments, the total contract include what target and one-time budgets, meaning any one-time OTRs. It does not include target budgets for TC3 and TCAT. And that's primarily because we have obligations that go beyond just ourselves. So, for example, TC3, by law, can't have a reduction in this case, and we would need partnership with Cortland County. TCAT, we have the relationship with the other two underwriters. So in this instance, I did not include any reduction in their contributions. And then I'm also suggesting that we possibly entertain a fourth quarter reduction of a 25% payment, but review that in the August-September timeframe when we have a little better understanding as to what the impact is going to be in its totality with respect to the crisis. In general, it's around $500,000 reduction in expenditures. The capital program. So if you remember correctly, we made a good, robust investment into the capital program coming into 2020, really made some serious planning and first steps into doing some significant facility investments. And we still have those plans, and we'll update those capital plans. And those aren't plans to be abandoned. They have to probably be reworked as we go into 2021. But to say, for the most part, it's probably likely, and I don't think I would recommend at this point, that we are not going to move forward with designing the downtown facility. That in and of itself, or moving that from the docket in 2020, means we could reduce this year's contribution in the capital program by $500,000. I did talk with Rick. Rick's not here today. I did talk with Rick earlier today to confirm our required debt payments as well as other projects in the capital program. He agreed and understood that we could, in the capital fund, could withstand holding back on a $500,000 out of the 6.8 that we commit to the capital program every year. So instead of putting $6.8 million into the capital program, we'd only put $6.3 million into the capital program, saving us $500,000 this year. And obviously, the capital program itself and the annual contribution, if you remember, we increased it, doubled it last year or this year from 0.5% of the prior levy to 1% of the prior year's levy. Obviously, that is something we would assess and reassess as we get ready to do the 2021 budget when we get to that point this late summer. There are several other things to consider, and I will say it's not necessarily good things. Well, the certain things aren't positive things. The uncertain things could be, but they're uncertain, so I don't know if we can consider them. So I have on the left side here, we have increased expenditure, decreased revenue. That has a negative impact on us, an increase in expenditure and a decrease in revenue. What we do know is the New York State budget that was recently adopted single-handedly gave us an additional roughly $350,000 of increased payments for 730 restoration services. If you remember, 730 is referencing to the criminal procedure law 730, in which individuals that are not fit to stand trial have to be hospitalized. Prior years, the counties and the state shared the cost of that hospitalization 50-50. And in recent years, costs have gotten between $300,000 and $350,000 on our side of the house, which means total cost is around $700,000. The state has decided to tell us that we can now pay the full 100% of that 370 restoration service. So we would expect roughly a $300,000 to a $350,000 increase in expenditure starting this year. That was unexpected. Also, as part of the recent budget negotiations, the state has decided to create a distressed hospital and nursing home fund, of which all counties have to contribute sales tax to over the next 2 years. Upstate counties have to make up a $50 million contribution, while the state or the city has to make up, I think, a $200 million contribution. That will impact us based on our total proportional share of sales tax and upstate, which means that the state is going to shave off $331,000, no matter how much we bring in this year, to help fund the distressed and hospital and nursing home fund. I did check with our hospital folks to ask them how they would access this, and that is yet to be determined. So how hospitals and nursing homes access this fund, we don't yet know, but we are funding it. I have another question mark, a potential increase in the New York retirement system contribution. As you know, the retirement system is heavily invested into the stock market, as most retirement systems are. And most likely with the volatile changes in the market, I would expect a decrease in return, which would mean an increase in local contribution to the retirement system. Generally, this doesn't happen last minute. You know, usually it's set a year in advance, and I think our bill is in February or December, Kevin?
It's due in February, but we prepay it in December.
Okay. So we pay it in December. I've talked to several colleagues, and no one really knows, so I'm thinking anything is game, that the state could adjust the retirement contribution this year, even though they typically don't. So I kind of put a question mark next to it, not knowing it, but it is an uncertainty. Increased revenue, decreased expenditure. This would be good. Increased revenue, less cost. Unfortunately, I have less certainty on the right-hand column than I do on the left-hand column. As we know, we went through this long battle with our governor over the EFMAP funding, and thankfully, our federal representatives, Senator Schumer was a big part of it as well as NYSAC, was able to ensure that some of the EFMAP or increased aid from the last stimulus package would go directly to counties. That's good. Unfortunately, no one knows how it's going to get to us or how we're going to get it or in what form it's going to be paid to us. So, and following up with NYSAC this week, and just yesterday, I asked them, we were supposed to get $2.3 million. How is that going to work? We started to get some feedback saying, well, it's really not 2.3. It might be less depending on certain other factors, and you might get a portion of that. So the ranges I've had is anywhere between $590,000 the $2.3 million of promised EFMAP funding, of which we don't know how we're going to get it or when we're going to get it. You passed the resolution at the last legislative meeting, which was an initiative I actually brought to NYSEC saying, well, let's start getting some answers. The reason I have questionable there is because it feeds into the next bullet point, which is we were supposed to get EFMAP aid as due to the Affordable Care Act over the past 3 years, and those reconciliations are delayed with the state. So when we talk about EFMAP, I'm not really confident or comfortable betting on it. Obviously, if we did get $2.3 million, it would definitely help us. But right now, not getting the reconciliation over the past 3 years, my confidence right now is not exactly 100% that we're going to get this aid or to how much. I want to be wrong here. I hope it's the whole, I think it's 2.27. But I think right now we just have to wait and see what happens and see how the state is going to remit that. What I think will probably happen is if we do get some of it, it'll probably remit it to us through decreased local shares and our weekly Medicaid bill. That's what I would expect to happen because Medicaid bill can't, your Medicaid share cannot change as an acceptance factor of this EFMAP funding for the state. So hopefully that'll be the case. And that seems to be changing. I know Martha, you and I talked last night briefly over email about this. You know, we'll hunt it down one way or another to see what's going down.
Right.
There's also this 275. I think this was supposed to be 257, so I apologize. This should be probably 257. There has been some increase in COFA aid. Out of the whole entire budget, the one department that seemed to make out okay was Office for the Aging, which Holmes had something to do with it, I'm almost certain. The problem, and it's unrestricted aid. The problem is I'm not sure if it's subject to the governor's cuts, but I think it is. So while I think we made out, I don't think we can bank on it. If it's unrestricted aid, we definitely have more than $257,000 of local share that we could use it towards, but I think it's still going to be subject to the governor's cut one way or another over the next three times he has the opportunity. So I leave it in a kind of an undetermined state. I don't bank on it until we have more understanding of if it can be accessed by the governor or not. So out of all of these other considerations, I think these are the only two we can probably guarantee is going to happen. Not probably. These are going to happen. We are going to get paid, we are going to have to pay more money for 730 restoration services, and we are going to lose $331,000 of sales tax. The others, I don't know. So here is kind of the mixed match of everything. The revenue shortfall or increased expenditures or whatever come to about $11.8 million. The expenditure reductions just that we talked about just now, roughly about $4.2 million. To put that in context, here's your estimated operating deficit. If you wanted context of what this $11.8 million means, it is roughly equal to eliminating the entire sheriff's department, including the sheriff himself. Meaning if you were to eliminate all of patrol and all of the correction officers, that would equal about $11.8 million, just to put it in context. I'm not suggesting you do it. I'm just saying that's what it would equal, just so you have a context of it. If you wanted to levy the 11.8, it would be about a 23% tax increase on your money. Also putting it in context. I will speak briefly to federal aid.
Jason, I just had a quick question. So yeah. The 11.8 is the estimated amount, assuming that we have students from Cornell and Ithaca that are returning back in the town. Is that right?
That's a real good question, Shauna. So the sales tax model that we used, which would I think would be most impacted by students not coming back, assumed that students would be returning. I don't know how to not assume it. I mean, what that would probably mean is that a lot of those industries just would have significantly less growth or less sales than the prior year. So if we get down that path, this will just increase even more. You know, if we talk about that, you know, students, obviously higher ed is a big part of our economy. If higher ed does not have students returning this fall, and again, that is a very complicated and complex decision on their behalf. I don't, you know, I I can't imagine the different complexity. I do understand some of the complexities they're going through with it, but, and I'm not saying, you know, I'm not blaming them or pointing any fingers, but if the students were not to come back, I think the number is going to be significantly different. I also think that then you'll start to see a real impact on property values. Because your commercial properties, I think, will really have a shortcoming when it comes to revenue generation. I think they're a critical piece to the economy. Your local spending will be down significantly. I don't know how to model that yet. I just don't know. But I do think that this will be severely worse. And I use the word severely. I think it will be a lot worse in terms of what would happen to your local economy. And then the question is, you know, when do they come back? And in what fashion do they come back? Is it a spring return? Is it a fall of 21 return? You know, those are all questions. This is why partly you almost can't get too far ahead of yourself while you want to have things on the horizon. We couldn't, I don't know that spending time right now trying to guesstimate that would be valuable because so many variables could impact that. But so it does not assume that. But I do think if it happens, if they don't return, this will be severely different. So here's some next steps, some immediate steps, next steps, and future planning I want to go over. The action plan, maintain the current vacancies for the remainder of the year, make the planned expenditure reductions, reduce the third quarter payments to agencies, and amend the capital plan, decreasing the capital contribution this year. I think all of these are musts that we have to do in order to, what I would call, slow the bleeding of this financial challenge. The next steps over the next next few weeks, review temporary layoff options. I think we have to entertain and understand what that may mean for us both short-term and long-term. Analyze early retirement incentive. Right now we are entertaining and starting to analyze what would it mean if we were to offer or recommend that the legislature adopt an early retirement incentive and how that may be able to get current employees to retire early and then potentially not fill those positions. And review the current and retiree health insurance options. There are some changes we think that we were planning on working on this year and recommend to the legislature that we think would be positive to both retirees and the county with respect to changing some of those retiree health care options. And now we want to expedite that process. I'll say that, you know, let me get to the next phase. Future planning, monitor state actions in the local economy to develop the 21 budget. Obviously, you know, we don't have a fiscal target, and I don't know that we're going to have one right now. Develop a strategy for reopening the county facilities and offices. So right now, the planning team of the EOC is starting to gather information, starting to talk to different departments, starting to prepare for what safety measures and protocols, internal policies that may have to be updated, changed, created in order to open offices when that opportunity or that time comes, and doing it in a safe manner so that folks, if they are going to come back to the office, the question about remote work is a new question. And if they do come back, how do they come back safely? How do we see the public again? All of these are questions that not only us, but every business, every organization, nonprofit, government agency is also dealing with and grappling with right now. And then the same thing is begin to work with county departments on restructuring and reimagining county operations. I think it's safe to say that even if we did get a federal stimulus relief, it is going to address maybe the shortfall this year, probably not all of it. I think we have to be prepared that structurally the budget is going to have to change in the upcoming years. And that really when you start looking at the reason I concluded this slide was to show you that, you know, this is probably 90 positions, roughly 90, 100 positions maybe. When we talk about the equivalent to 11.8 million, I mean, there's no way to cut pencils and paper to be able to make up this type of shortfall in revenue or this type of shortfall in operating deficit. And you can't sustain an operating deficit like this for any more than a year. Even though we have a good fund balance, you're going to have infrastructure needs. We're going to have to talk about what the structure of the budget looks like based on what the expectation of revenues are going to be, where I think some departments are going to have to be creative in the way they operate and implement services, which is going to change. So when I talk about working and starting to work with county departments and leadership about restructuring and reimagining, I think it's practical to think that some departments are not going to be the same size next year as they are this year. Uncertainty. So I thought this was interesting information. I don't mean it to be gloom and doom, but I think it's relevant for people to understand. Uncertainty is the common, is the phrase that I think best fits our current circumstance. We're uncertain about what the short-term impacts are, what is going to happen to our local economy, to our community, to our organizations. And I say that because they're all different, right? What happens to an organization as a result of this isn't necessarily linked to the economy directly, but how they deliver service, how they're going to continue to carry business, how they're going to execute what their mission is going to change. And we don't know what that meant. So what is the short-term impacts? The economy deteriorated rapidly, and at what pace will it continue to deteriorate, or will it level off? Will it stop? Will it reverse? We don't know. The timing of the restart, everything is indicating that the beginning of the third quarter will probably be the reopening or the restart of communities. What does that look like? We don't know, but it's going to be a balance of public health decisions and public health policy and about how do we monitor the disease, how do we surveil the disease, and, you know, and if you open up or restart too soon, does it trigger a negative impact? That, those are all things we don't know. It's a level of uncertainty. The pace of restart builds upon that. Again, we don't know how quickly to do things. We don't know how slow to do things. It's all uncertain. And then obviously the concern of additional waves of the pandemic or epidemic coming back, what's going to happen? Anytime we've looked at pandemics in the past, there's multiple waves of them. We're all reading and hearing about what we think is going to happen this fall. You know, what happens when you start to increase activity again? And how do we manage any resurgence? How do we manage that, and that has to do with the partnership with our healthcare system, the partnership with our public health policies that we set forth. So all of this is uncertain, right? That's what makes this process, as I mentioned earlier, really difficult. And you know, like I said, I usually have no problem, even under worst of circumstances, being able to do financial analysis and do it with a relative amount of confidence. All of these factors play into that uncertainty that makes it very difficult to do. Which is why updating it, staying on top of it, is a whole additional exercise, more so than we would normally do under any circumstance. But it's necessary to understand if our estimates, our projections are going in the right direction or going in the wrong direction. If they're going in the wrong direction, how do we make another correction to be able to accommodate that? And lastly, we want to end on somewhat of a positive note. This is our own state theater. We're all in this together. It is a challenge, but there are opportunities that are going to come from this, and it's just going to be a collaborative effort. We are going to have to persevere, and we're going to have to demonstrate leadership more so than we've ever seen in the past. And we'll be able to get through this. It's just going to be, there are some difficult decisions that are going to come in the very near future. So that is the gist of it. I'd be happy to answer any questions. And go from there.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Kevin, Lisa and Amy, and all the department heads who've already pitched in, Rick Snyder, everybody else who's been working on this. One thing to think about is we did come into this with a strong economy. We have great bones in this community. And worse comes to worse, if we suffer through this year and the next year, at some point there will be a vaccine, and at some point there will be a new normal, and it might not be till 2022 or 2023, but I think, you know, we can pull this community through this period, and that's kind of our task. I think it's important to figure out how to balance the negatives and the positives. Look for any opportunities, as you've got there on the last slide, Jason. I think that there may be some. There may be some surprises. So I don't think that's Pollyanna stuff. I think it's real. So I am grateful and. You know, sobered by all of this. So thank you very much, Jason. I see Rich's hand for starters. Do we need to share the screen or do you want
Yeah, let's take it down.
Jason,
I mean, if we want, if people want to see slides, you can pull it back up again, right? Okay. All right. Thanks, Rich.
Yeah, I was wondering if we could add to the executive session a real estate matter.
Sure. You bet.
Thank you.
That was it. Okay. Mike Lane.
I guess I'm unmuted. Jason, on the sales tax projections, I still am wondering about internet sales tax, and it does seem to me that with the closure of our retail, that more people will be buying things online. Amazon's doing wonderful, for example, and we should be generating some more tax there. Does NYSAC have any projections for us about what might be happening with that?
No, they don't have projections. I mean, it's a good point, and anything you look at around retail, around some of the different categories that are around retail, even grocery stores are now online. So it's a good point, and I think there's an expected increase in internet sales. The balancing or the counter impact to that is the large impact on income and disposable income with unemployment. So you're balancing, yeah, more people are definitely, they may not be going to the brick and mortar store, but they still might be purchasing something through internet sales, but the balancing impact of the increased amount of unemployment and the decrease in earnings, that's probably having a greater trigger. It's a combined trigger, so what's the balancing effect of that? So while you may see internet sales jump up as a category, the net is not having a positive impact because you're seeing it. You're going to start to see a negative impact due to a lack of earnings.
I've got Ann Corman, Anna, and Deborah. Can you get to your hand on your screen, Deborah? Because
nope.
Okay. All right, Annie, Anna, and then Deborah.
Thank you for the presentation. I have a couple of questions here. First off, for workforce, I thought I heard, Jason, you told Natalie to go ahead and say that the deputy position was going to be hired.
Yes, I did.
Are you changing your mind on that now?
Not right now. I think providing more effort and support around workforce development and what needs are going to happen around the workforce realm are going to be important right now. You're talking about getting people back to work, or you're talking about improving people getting back to work in the workforce in general, and we have literally one person that focuses on that. I think the support is needed, and I encourage her to try to fill a position to give her the additional support.
Okay, I agree also. I just didn't know if that was included in all the other vacant positions. And then as far as aid to hospitals, and maybe you don't know this, but as far as the last package that was passed by the feds, with their aid to hospitals, do you foresee that changing our aid to hospitals?
So I do know that that our hospital is slotted to get a few million dollars from that stimulus. I want to say between 4 and 5 million. I don't think it comes anywhere near the amount of revenue loss they've had. Again, just from my brief, discussions with them, their revenue loss is 4 or 5 times the aid that they're getting or the relief they're getting. So I don't know about the additional aid that may be coming to them, but I have a feeling it dwarfs compared to what their need is.
Thanks. The last question is regarding hearing Governor Cuomo today saying that saying that we need 30 contact tracers or contact investigators for each 100,000 population. And so just wondering what you thought about that.
One of the things that I think, and I just don't think it's because, we're here, I honestly believe that part of the reason I think our community has fared much better than others is because of the contact tracing, contact investigation that took place and was taking place by our public health department from mid-January to now. Where some communities just got so overwhelmed they just threw up their hands and stopped doing it, You know, our folks were continuing to do it. CMC jumped in when they expanded their drive-through facility. I think we have the capacity. I also think that this is going to take on a new role as you start to try to open up the community, and different places like higher ed may start to engage in its own contact tracing in order to manage the amount of influx that they want to start to see come in. Some of the things we're starting to hear about. So I think for now we have a much more robust infrastructure for it to say what's going to be needed. I think the 30 per 100,000 is probably the beginning phases of it. It depends on how much testing, and this is really a Frank question more than me, but how much testing is going to be expected, what's the relevance of it, and then how much, that contact investigation piece to it is going to be an important piece of trying to prevent the spread. So I think we are in a position where we can do it, and we have been doing it, and right now they're very well experienced in it. Will it be able to meet the need? I think it meets the immediate need. How much? I don't know the answer to that question right now. I think we're better positioned than probably the majority, not the vast majority of upstate New York, if not the rest of the state.
So it's sounding like we don't need to set aside money right now to hire additional investigators. Is that what I'm hearing?
I don't think so. And there's been a lot of discussion about this at the state and federal level. So, part of you want to think that if we do need to ramp up, we're either going to be provided or there's going to be some support with it. But, if that turns out to be a critical piece of the puzzle, then we'll figure out a way to make it happen. But like everything, what he said today could be well more developed in a week or so. So
thank you.
Okay, I've got Anna, Deborah, then Henry.
Thanks for this depressing and powerful and strong and very well thought through and researched presentation, Jason. A few questions. One, you talked about the factors. You talked about the FMAP. The original estimate we got was 2.3, potentially down to, I can't remember what it was, somewhere around 500,000. You mentioned factors that you have they been communicated to you? I guess what my question is do we have any sense of what those factors are that would cause that reduction from 2.3 to 500,000?
I can speak a little bit about it. When I reached out to Dave Lucas at NYSAC, actually a colleague of mine tipped me off about it earlier in the week. I reached out to him saying, hey, what's going on with this? His explanation, and Martha, chime in if you have another opinion of it, because I did share the information with you. My understanding of it is that it has to do with, the amount we'll receive has to do with the amount that was requested by the governor. I think the maximum amount we could have received was about $2.3 million, but it looks like half of that was requested by the governor, and we get a percentage of that. I saw Dave emailed me just earlier today with a breakdown and a little bit more of an explanation, but that's the vagueness of the information we're getting on. And that's probably about the best I can do.
And there's no understanding why he would request less than we were eligible for, except that it somehow influences the state budget somehow. We have no idea.
No, the total amount. I think it was $6.7 billion for the state, and on top of that, money for counties, and ours was 2.37. That's an annual number. But the law actually reads that it's the 6.2% increase in the federal share only during the period of the emergency.
Okay.
I'm guessing that he looked at that and said, all right, we don't maybe think this is going to be a full year. So I don't think Cuomo actually determines. I think it's the feds. Who will say how much it will be.
Okay, thank you, Martha.
That's what I think. Jason, what do you think?
Sounds good to me. That's pretty much what we're getting right now. It's really frustrating because it's a lot of money. You would think we'd be able to pin this down.
Yeah, and I've sent a note to Amanda Spellacy in Schumer's office. She's been our main source of information. So we'll see when she can come up for air if we can get more information on that.
Martha, did they also give us an estimate? Because this is the first time that I'm hearing that the governor was able to take a cut of the amount that was allocated to each of the municipalities or counties. That's what it sounded like, Jason, you were indicating.
Well, not that he's taking a cut, it's that we're just getting less. And I don't know that he's getting our money. It just sounds like everybody's getting less for circumstances that we can't quite clarify.
You mean on this on the FMAP?
Yeah.
Right. If we're eligible, or if for the period of time we are in this crisis, technically by their standards, it's only, say, 1.2, and some of it is being kept with the state. That's what it sounded like, so maybe I just misunderstood.
No. Amanda was really, really clear, and Schumer has been enormously forceful on this, that any Medicaid assistance, additional assistance on Medicaid to the states had to also follow formulas where counties have a share in Medicaid. And, as you know, we're the poster child. We're not the only county, the only state, but we're the biggest, I think, where there's the biggest county share. So that requirement is that it be literally only a pass-through, that Cuomo can't pull it or reduce it, that the feds will determine what it is, and we are supposed to get the issue that Tom Reed has talked about on the weekly calls that he's had, that he's worried about, is that if Cuomo sees that, oh, look, Tompkins County got a million more in Medicaid, they can afford for us to cut a million out of probation and the health department reimbursements, let's say.
Right.
So that's a shell game. It's really going to be hard to figure out.
So trying to make sure that we don't see retaliatory action by the state. Yeah, no, of course. Jason, you mentioned also the layoff potential. Were you referring to layoffs or possible furloughs or straight up layoffs?
Temporary layoffs would be similar to furloughs.
Okay, so they were temporary. And then the third question I had was, you showed that Tompkins County had the greatest unemployment claims over southern tier in the state, and thank you for pointing that out. I'm wondering if there's any bit of a dive into that. I know, our economy is not very diversified. It's so heavily based on education, tourism, and the medical. I would imagine medical isn't necessarily a place where it's experiencing huge cuts right now, some. But is that your estimate, that it's because of the education and tourism reductions that we're seeing such a hit?
I've been going back and forth with Natalie to try to get clarification on it. It has to do, and I'll get back to everyone as to why it was distinctly different. I think it's a little bit of what you talk about, but I have to get some clarity from Natalie on it.
All right. I'd love to hear that. Thank you, Jason. Yep.
Okay, thanks, Anna. And by the way, that was a great question about the property tax values. I just want, I knew we were going to get to it. So, Deborah and then Henry.
Yeah, thank you. I'm curious to know why we pay our state assessment for retirement in advance. I mean, I guess it makes good sense, but do we need to do that every year? In a year like this, could we off until January rather than doing it in December, and how much would that save us?
We usually get a reduced payment, which is why we do it in December versus when it's due in February. So I'd have to, we actually pay a smaller bill than when you pay it a few months earlier.
Yeah, but can you ballpark what the amount is usually annually?
I'd have to find out and get back to you.
You mean the state likes to get the money before the calendar year's over?
I'm pretty sure that's why we pay it early. We pay in December, yeah.
Yeah, there's a discount for early payment.
There's a discount for early payment.
If we're strapped, we're strapped. And if it's 5%, we might be better off waiting until January.
I think that's more of a cash flow question, which I'm not as more concerned about. But I can tell you, I can share with you what we would say. We would just be paying more a few months later. So I don't know that, we can talk about whether there's a value to that. From a cash perspective, I don't know that it really matters a whole lot. So it's not as we don't have the ability to pay that bill. Just saving a little bit of money is a good thing in doing it. But I can definitely get back to what we would say.
Jason, I can speak to that for a moment. On when we make our payment in December, we get a pretty steep discount by not paying it in February. So that's obviously why we pay it in December. But that payment is for 75% for the year that we're in. For instance, in 2020, in December, when we make that payment, 75% of it pays for the last 9 months of 2020, and then 3 months is prepaid into the next year, 2021. So that's to bring us in sync with the state's fiscal year. So we only make one payment a year. It stays in our bank for the whole year until December, and then we pay the whole wad. And we also pay TC3's portion, and we pay the library's portion, and we bill them, and they pay us back. So that's kind of the formula on how that works with retirement.
Thanks, Rick. Do you have a sense of how many dollars we're talking? What's the discount? Ballpark.
I'll come right back to you in a minute. I can look it up real quick.
Okay. Thank you. Rich, do you still have your hand up from before, or is that a new one? Oh, all right. I've got Henry and then Mike Lane.
Yes, thank you for the information. I was wondering, Jason, for next year's budget, what time frame do you think we ought to talk about that? How much additional information do we need?
I think you stay in your same budget schedule. I don't think you should change your budget schedule. I think you can keep it and, you know, just like in any year, some things can change mid-year, and this may be the case. I mean, you have a pretty lengthy process for it, and it's a thorough one. So I don't know that if you push it back, you're going to have to make your process shorter or tighter somehow. I think you have a good thorough process that will allow you to make decisions that you need in a reasonable time frame. And if changes come up mid-year, then you know you're mid-process and you make those changes. That's just my suggestion.
Okay, I have another question. I was wondering on the unemployment numbers. I don't know that Cornell has furloughed many people. Do you know whether the large employers in the county have furloughed anyone yet, except for QU Medical?
I do believe. I know that the first week that the major shutdowns took place, that Fort Warner laid off a significant amount of individuals. Outside of that, I don't have really first-hand knowledge of major industries.
So does your numbers really? So your numbers don't really support large numbers of people being furloughed yet then?
Oh, I think there's a large number of folks that have filed for unemployment. Right. You know, you have a big service industry that's impacted as a result of the shutdown. So I think there's good reason that you had a large jump in unemployment claims compared to this time last year. I mean, this time last year, you were dealing with, you know, 50 a month. Now in 1 month, you know, or 1 week, it jumped up to 1,200 or 1,300 in 1 week. So that 5 week period of time is very real in terms of its growth or the increase. If you're looking for industry specific, I don't have that information. I can see what I can find out.
Okay, thank you.
All right, before I move on, one thing on the retirement numbers, if we have significant people retiring early, then that could reduce our overall payment, reduce the increase in the overall payment a little bit. And in the earlier budget capital and personnel, we had talked about trying to schedule another session like this when all legislators would be available, probably in mid to early July, early to mid-July. That would be timed after the second date when the governor can make changes in the budget. So if we can follow up on that conversation, and that might be a good check-in for all of us to get ready to do the 2021 budget in the fall.
Martha, I have an answer for you for the retirement question you had.
Sure.
The savings is $65,000 or 0.85%.
Okay.
Okay.
So what's the total that we pay?
The toll we pay is about $7 million, and that includes everybody, TC3 and the library, and our portion is about $5,800,000 out of that $7.1 million. $5.8 million, I'm sorry.
So in a pinch, it just seems to me if we're really in deep doo-doo, the timing means a lot to the budget, even if we are saving $65,000, for what it's worth.
Rick, did you want to comment on that? Or Jason?
I don't know that I would agree with that. I mean, it's paid in December, Rick, so it's an accounts payable for the current year, correct? Whether we pay it December or February?
Right. It's going to be expensed in this year, whether we pay it or not, based on our accrual accounting. And TC3 does pay us on an installment plan ahead of time, where they pay us 1/12 each month preceding the payment. So that's to help their cash flow, so they don't have to pay us a big check at the end of the year. They're already on the installment plan. The library always pays us within 30 days before the close of the fiscal year. So we've been pretty strict about paying it by the December due date.
$65,000 is about an FTE. Mike Lane, Amanda Champion, then Anna Kellis. Mike.
The last two or three years, we've sort of automatically given our departments a 2% increase. Back during the Great Recession, we had two or three years in which we gave them 0% increase, and they had to find savings even for the contractual increases of labor, for example. And I wonder if we're giving any thought to what we're going to be able to do along those lines.
You mean what direction to give department heads?
Yes, and that would, I think there'd have to be a direction from us to our county administrator at some point. And I think that's what this next meeting you're talking about, Martha, would certainly need to look at.
For 2021?
For 2021.
Okay. Jason?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're prepared. I mean, I'm envisioning that I'll probably tell the department heads to start to craft two or three different budgets, one that might be flat, one that might have a certain percentage reduction, and another that might have another percentage reduction. And I think that's how I'm going to ask, probably. I mean, it's too early to tell, but that's probably how I would approach having them start to think, you know, when it comes that time, to present probably two or three different budgets to us. To assess and understand, meaning in our actual budget system, that what we receive when they go to input their budgets, we go through that process. I think that's probably the only way we're going to be able to understand the spectrum of options.
The only caveat I would say there is we did that a couple of times to the departments, and the departments came back and said, we're spending too much time trying to craft all these different budgets that aren't really going to be used, and they weren't happy about having to do so many different ones. So I think you need to keep that in mind too.
I think this time those budgets might be used. I know you're right, Mike.
I don't know.
So okay, Amanda, and then Anna.
Yeah, thank you, and I just want to thank all you lovely people sitting at that table right there, and I'm just incredibly impressed with everything that you know. I have two questions. You mentioned, Jason, that TC3 and TCAT are sort of separate because you have to work with the other entities. So my question is, what is that looking like? Are you already meeting with them? What's the process for that? I'll just throw out my second question, and then you can answer, is about TCAD and where does that fit in Is that one of the agencies that you're asking to, you know, look, take a 25% reduction, or just where does that fit in?
Yes, TCAB is part of that. They're part of a bunch of agencies, so they would take a 25% cut on their third quarter payment. As far as TC3 and TCAB, I have not, I mean, I've been in contact with TC3 constantly throughout all of this. Yeah, they got hit pretty hard with the state budget. They're going to, they just got word they're going to get hit even harder from the state. So I have not engaged with them or Cortland County about reducing, and I think there are certain provisions of the law that prevent us from actually reducing our contribution to them. That said, part of the sponsored agency reductions does include a small reduction in their OTR for the year. So that's a little different. As far as TCAP, I have not talked with TCAP about budget reduction, nor have I spoken with Cornell or the city about it. What I have done is sat down with Dwight and Scott to talk about their budget. They did, well, we got it, but it goes towards TCAP, about $7 million in the stimulus for revenue, you know, for support, general support of public transportation, which would be towards TCAP and Gadabout. And what we did about 2 weeks ago was understand where some of the pinch points in their budget is going to be. STOA aid is going to be a big part, but we'll start to find out about it in May and whether STOA aid is hit significantly. And then also, I mean, any revenue that may be reduced from ridership, et cetera, et cetera. So only thing I've done is try to understand how it might hit their financial impact. I've not started to talk to them, or I would probably go one direction from the legislature if we're going to start to talk about reducing our contribution, and that would then trigger conversations with Cornell, TCAT, and Cornell City and TCAT.
Great. Thank you.
Anna.
Yeah, question. You had mentioned as one of the things that we're going to have to into evaluating is the potential program for early retirement. I was curious if we had an estimate. Right now we've gone through the 770 positions that we have and which positions right now might even be eligible, and maybe with that a sense of what impact that would have on our retirement cost, retirement package benefits cost.
So I was hoping to have something for you to look at, you know, putting all this information together just in this process, which was different. We are in the process of doing that analysis now and want to have something to you in a week or two to consider and start talking about. We don't have the analysis done to understand exactly what we would offer, what would be the impact, what positions would be impacted. We have the ability and we have all the information. We just haven't gotten to the point of analyzing and crafting yet. But I think in the next 2 weeks, we'll probably have 2 to 3 weeks, we'll have something for you to talk about. We'll probably have a recommendation for you, too.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
I don't see any other hands. Oh, Henry. Oh, I'm sorry. Mike Stigler was up there first. Then Henry. Go ahead, Mike. You're on mute.
Yep. Hey, Jason. I have like three questions, actually. The first question is basically.
Oh, man.
Mike, you're breaking up. If you try turning your video off, you might.
It's about approach. I mean, is it better turning what off?
Mike, if you turn off your video, you might. Your
okay.
Voice is better.
Yeah, let me try that. So, Jason, my first question is it better to do something kind of like what Savante did today, saying, okay, here are the cuts we're going to make and the kind of money we're going to try to save through these cuts? Or is it better to take almost like Andrew Cuomo's approach and not make any of those cuts quite yet, but say, listen, this is how much we're in the hole? I'm just wondering from a point of negotiation with the state and, frankly, with the federal government as well, if you make all the cuts now, you're almost ahead of the game kind of idea. And that,
yeah.
I hope I'm phrasing it right. I don't know if I'm doing it right.
I think I know what you're saying. I think we're doing a little bit of both. I think you have to start. So also, I also think the state works on a slower pace than we do in general, just because of the machine of the state. But I think we are in a position where these reductions, are something I think we need to make now. And I think there's, it provides you, you're going to have plenty of opportunity to assess, and I think you're going to have to make, we're going to have to make more decisions in the future. I don't think holding off is going to be in our best interest, because I'm fairly certain, if there's anything I am certain about, is that this picture is not going to get better between now and the end of the year. It's probably only going to stay the same or get worse. It might get a little bit better, but I don't think we're going to see any reversal that would make us want to go back and say, gee, you know, I wish we didn't do that. Unfortunately, just the way this is looking, I think that what we're talking about doing now is fair and reasonable. It also is a little systematic. So, for example, the recommendation about cutting agencies 25% for the third quarter payment, come back and we can talk about it again in another 2 months and talk about the fourth quarter, if that's something we need to do or not. If we start to see this thing curtail differently, then maybe that's a different discussion. If we say, no, it's impossible, it's going to happen, then we probably already have other decisions in the queue that are going to be more severe. So I think we're doing exactly what we should be doing at the right pace. To not do anything, I think, would be putting us in a position where that operating deficit at the end of the year is going to be larger. And I do think that no matter what, if there is any local aid, I don't think it's going to come near covering what we would need it to cover to get through the year. And I also, so that's a snapshot of this year. I don't want to lose sight that next year is not going to be the same, right? There's structural change that has to happen. And the way we get to that point is going to be through probably, positions. You're not going to get there through material costs or equipment costs. You're going to get there through some level of positions. I don't know if that answers your question, Mike.
No, that was good. Yeah, my second question is kind of based on what you're going after here. You were talking about like 90 positions. Are you envisioning cutting a little bit from each department, or are you going to take more of a lockdown approach, whereas there are certain services we do that are essential and we need to bolster those, maybe even spend a little more money on some of those, but these other services that maybe aren't mission critical, those are the ones we're going to dig deeper into?
So right now the vacancies, we're taking them as they come, and we're going to keep them as they are. And we are making some of those decisions with the vacancies. Like I said, there's four positions that we're going to fill because they're critical positions to the infrastructure or to the services that we're providing. As we get into this analysis a little bit further, we'll talk a little bit more about what the options mean when you come to temporary furloughs and layoffs. So I think there's a blend of both of what you just asked when you start talking about those things.
Okay.
Jason, didn't you say, hold on, Mike, the 90 positions was the equivalent of the $11.8 million gap?
Yeah, I used that as a comparison. I'm not obviously suggesting you eliminate the sheriff's office, but I just used it as a comparison of order of magnitude. I could say $11 million, it's kind of hard to understand it. When I say the entire sheriff's office, you get it, what I'm saying? Yeah.
Right, but you also then proposed $4.2 million in various savings. So net of $7.6 million is not 90, it's not 90 staff, it's what?
Right. But your revenue shortfall, I don't think, is not going to recoup after this year. I think that's your revenue shortfall you're going to be looking into the next year.
No, I understand. But just so we're not, assuming our gap is entirely of $11 million is entirely covered for this year, entirely covered by layoffs, because you've identified other things. Okay, Mike, you weren't finished, right?
No, last question. We have a lot of cash on hand. I know we're going to end up digging into some of that, and that's great. I mean, would it even make sense maybe, I wouldn't normally recommend this, but if bond rates are still going down through the floor, is it almost worth borrowing to pay current expenses? I see Mike Lane shaking his head. But, I mean, this has never happened. So how low would bond rates have to be to do that, to make sense to do that?
So I'll let Rick talk a little bit more about this, but obviously when you talk about borrowing money, there has to be a period of probable usefulness attached to it. So we couldn't necessarily just borrow to pay expenses. There are two mechanisms that you would use from a cash flow perspective, but I don't think we would need to do it. It would be a RAN or a TAN, which is a revenue anticipation note, or a tax anticipation note. That's a short-term borrow in anticipation of either a revenue, which is usually sales tax, or in tax anticipation of, which would be usually in lieu of or anticipation of property tax revenue. Both of those aren't anything that I wouldn't recommend. I know Rick and I have talked about them, and we're not in a cash flow crunch to do it. To just borrow money to be able to pay expenses now and amortize that over a period of time, the only people that can do that are the federal and state governments. We can't do that. We could only borrow for capital projects or equipment purchases, something that has a period of probably expense. So you could shift some expenses like the equipment, that type of thing, into it. I don't know that, it wouldn't be a significant amount to make an impact. But in order to just borrow to pay expenses, I don't think we can do that. Rick, did I cover enough of that, or is there anything left out of that?
Am I on? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
You're
on,
right?
Okay. I don't see a need right now to borrow, since we're not like the consortium where we have a lot of money invested in notes or T-bills or something that we can't get our hands on. All our money is pretty much short-term and in savings account with local banks. Right now, on March 31st, our cash balance was $91 million across all funds. So I don't see us needing to go borrow anytime soon.
And I just want to say, Mike, were you finished?
Yes, thank you very much, Mike.
We are, Jason, again, the big numbers. If we have an $11 million gap, we can find $4 million in savings of various sorts for this year. The gap is $7 million that we would pull out of fund balance. Is that
so? How this would generally work is so what would happen is if we have a revenue, revenues over expenses, right? So every year for the past few years, we've had more revenues than expenses, so we've been able to build fund balance, which adds to that cash number that Rick just talked about and adds a good support system to us. In this instance, where we would have less revenues than expenses, essentially, bills have to be paid, and that money is going to be coming out of, for lack of a better term, your fund balance, which means your fund balance is going to go down. So that's how, that would happen at the end of the year. You wouldn't necessarily appropriate fund balance. You would have, revenues over expenditures equals a deficit. Therefore, that shortcoming is going to be hitting your bottom line, and your fund balance will decrease, correlating with that. That's how it would happen on an operating deficit. Obviously, if you have an operating deficit of $7+ million, we got to make sure we can't do that. We don't have that next year. Because that's something that we can sustain for any period of time. If that was the way it happened, just as we presented it, and that's what happens, okay. But next year we have to make some structural changes so that we don't have that $7 million deficit.
Okay, thank you. We've got Henry, Deborah, and then Anna.
Yes. Jason, you mentioned that there would be also some savings with health insurance. What would that be exactly?
So right now we're looking at several things. Last fall, Lisa and I talked about looking into, and we were in the process of, everything happened with coronavirus. Basically, there are several things to look at on health insurance. One would be a Medicare supplement that we could adopt. You did it for TC3 a few months ago, where a Medicare supplement can be an option for for retirees that are Medicare eligible. Right now, we don't provide that, which means a lot of our retirees that are Medicare eligible are continuing to purchase, and we continue to support a full health care plan as a secondary payer, which is basically over-insuring an individual or individuals. So there's something like that we're looking into, and there may also be some changes to the current health care plan that we may want to consider. Moving forward. So we'll probably couple that with the discussion around our retirement incentive.
Okay. And the last question, Martha, I know you sent around that list that Senator Schumer had about the schedule of payments. And I was trying to, what was Tompkins County supposed to get?
$9 million.
Okay. But then the limit is whether or not that could be used for coronavirus reimbursements or for general reimbursements.
My understanding is that is intended as replacement of lost revenue.
Yeah.
that we, you know, the first, whether it was the first or the second coronavirus bill was
right.
the expanded Medicaid reimbursements. This bunch was about unrestricted aid to state and local governments.
So one thing I would say about that, and that is good, but cautious, is that that's a one-time infusion of aid, which can help offset this year. So two things to think about that. Number one, if the governor takes that as, all right, you've been given all this aid, now I'm going to permanently remove state aid, maybe this year it balances itself, but next year does that permanency continue, which would be a concern of me. Meaning is the governor going to look at this and say, all right, well, great, you've got the money now, so I'm going to take this state aid over here, and then that continues in future years. And again, the second piece to that aid is that it's for this year only. It does not avoid the difficult decisions of what has to happen in 2021 because your revenues are not going to recover. I think they're still going to be there in terms of shortfalls.
Okay.
Okay. Deborah.
Yes, just a quick one. Do we happen to know how soon we'll hear after April 30th and again after June 30th what the governor's cuts are going to be?
I suspect we'll hear the day after, and then the legislature has 10 days. Then the legislature, well, the reason that is the legislature has 10 days to propose its proposals. So I would imagine there's a bartering negotiating period. It's probably a mini budget hashing again on three separate times throughout the year, if I take a guess. But I'll suspect that you're going to get it the first thing the next morning as to what's being proposed, and then the Assembly and the Senate is going to be scrambling to put together some type of either concurrence or rebuttal or what. This might be an active legislative advocacy process over the course of the next summer. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'd be thinking they're doing it right now. I mean, he's going to come out. You know, he has to certify that the budget is 1% or more out of balance. That's clearly going to happen. So there, I'm sure they're preparing right now what those cuts are going to be. So I just made a note to call Barbara to see what she knows about the process and is the legislature already talking, so to see if we can find out what's going on, because it's going to happen fast. Else, Deborah? Okay, all set. Okay, Anna.
One question, follow up of that. I'm assuming then the legislature is going to go back into session for those 10 days. Have they already announced their schedule that they'll go? I mean, that's technically after their session's done, so I'm curious.
In June? Possible. Could be an extended session. I would imagine it'll be an extended session.
I was just curious if we'd heard anything. The other question I had, actually, we've talked exclusively about state cuts. I'm curious if we've heard anything about federal cuts that have factored into your estimate or you're waiting for that. I mean, most of our social services money comes as a pass-through the state, and I know that there's been attempts, at least with the housing supports, in that context, but I haven't heard others, and I don't see anything represented in this presentation.
So far, I have nothing to suggest that we're going to receive less than what we budgeted. A good chunk of it is also a pass-through. I think some of it's a pass-through to TCAP, but we didn't get any feedback right now. It doesn't mean that it could change, but right now we didn't have any feedback on federal aid.
Mike Lane, Donna, okay, Mike Lane.
Yeah, I just want to say that I think we need to be very, very cautious about how we use our reserves and our fund balance. We can look around us at other counties and see how their struggles to stay under the tax cap drain their balances. And now they're jumping on furloughs and everything else way ahead of us because they're scared to death. We've got a little bit of breathing room, but so that we're able to have a meeting like this and talk about options, but we need to think about how we need to respond, and we may have to raise taxes. I hate to say that. I would like to say we could have a surtax, you know, maybe for 1 year or something. But we don't want to think we can just write a check out of the fund balance and then have that gone, because we're going to have to replace it with taxes at some point if the economy doesn't come back on a barrel.
Right. As I said at the start, this is mostly about this year. We can't raise taxes this year. We're having to figure out how to get ready for the next one.
I understand, but it won't be long. We're starting to talk. This retreat originally and always has been about the next year.
I know. Jason, did you want to add anything to that?
No, I mean, it's the right point to make, and you know, hopefully that, you know, over the next few months we start to close that deficit, that gap. I mean, that's the goal. What we're trying to do is, we know more information about revenue. Hopefully those improve. Hopefully revenues pick up. Hopefully we can narrow that $7 million deficit to a much smaller amount. You know, we're in a good, healthy position that if we do have operating shortfall this year, we'll be able to tap into it. But, I think when we talk about next year's budget, when we get to that point, you know, minimizing or not using any fund balance to balance the budget is going to be an important piece of the discussion. The question is you know, it's that last slide I had about, you know, the unknowns and the uncertainties, and how quick is the economy going to respond or not respond? That's going to drive a lot of the discussion. So that's what makes it difficult. But it's the right point you made. I mean, we have the fund balance, which is great. We're in a circumstance that if we need to utilize it, we can. Obviously, you don't want to – you can blow through it in a matter of 2 years.
I don't see any other hands. Have I missed anybody? Any other comments or questions at the moment? I want to say one thing about, you know, for example, when about the way that federal money is coming in and the state money, for example, the state money that, I guess, the sales tax that we're paying to help the hospitals and nursing homes. Federal money, unemployment money, the Paycheck Protection Program, the money that TCAT got, I mean, all of the funds that our partners are able to draw down really kind of help lift everybody's boat. So as we look forward to more lobbying and more public education, I want to thank Deborah for an op-ed. You've already submitted that, Deborah, about the federal bill?
Yeah. Matt Butler said it should be in this week's edition.
Okay, I mean, I think the kind of public education and lobbying that we'll need to do, we should recognize that we strongly believe federal money needs to come into local governments, but wherever it comes into the county is going to be a benefit. And I've seen, I think every one of us has seen, a really amazing level of collaboration and creativity among our partners. And Anne and I were on a meeting this afternoon with the city and heard a comment that Cougar Medical is really looking at being able to ramp up testing in a very major way. And I'm sure Jason, you know, I can't believe we're having a meeting without Frank. I just got to say that. I'm sure he's watching on TV.
Probably is, yeah.
That's the sort of thing, if something great like that happens, that Cougar Medical is going to be able to make happen. That helps all of us. So, the way TCAD, the city, the other municipalities have all pitched in and worked together, and can't say enough about the nonprofits, too. We just have to keep looking for those opportunities and cheering on our partners and all that. So if I can ask, I don't see any other hands, right? Jason, I wanted to check, do you
Dan has a question.
Dan and Rich.
Rich, okay. I don't see Dan. Go ahead, Dan.
Sorry, question. Dan's question, what is our fund balance? Our unassigned fund balance. Rick, do you have our unassigned fund balance as of last year?
Jason, I've got it.
Oh, you have it?
Yeah, in the 2020 budget, the estimate for after 2019 and 2020 applications was for unassigned general fund balance was $34,646,000.
So $34 million was the estimated.
Okay, Dan sent. All right, Rich.
I was just going to try to help ask Dan's question.
Okay. All right. Sorry, I'm kind of looking into this. All right, I have, Jason, I think you have a couple of points here. I want to know what you need from us. We are going into executive session. But is there anything in before we do that, anything where you need from us, you know, consensus or?
I don't think so. I know we went through there are obviously more, you know, fine tech details that came to the numbers that we came to. I think they're a necessary action that has to be taken, and move forward with executing them. So that we can start to, we can start to make some corrective action here. If there isn't consensus, then I would want to know that. But I think they're fair and reasonable considering circumstances at this point in time. And like I said, with respect to the agencies, we would come back and talk about, things in August and September to see how things have improved or not improved, and go through another conversation if there needs to be further reduction of that.
Okay. Are you? And you want to tell us what you're planning to bring to the legislature next week?
Next week, in terms of a resolution, or I'm sorry,
we're going to be talking about that next?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Any other comments or questions before we go into executive session? Rich.
I guess I'm still going back and forth in my mind that we have a significant fund balance and we should protect it. We should be very careful about it. But what is a fund balance for, if not to help you when you have a crisis? And so in my mind, I am thinking, is there a middle ground where we use some fund balance to make this somewhat less painful and get us to a functioning economy faster? And I don't know where I come down on that, but you were asking whether we have full consensus, Martha, and I'm still thinking.
Well, I don't think we have a proposal from Jason, right now.
I understand. I just didn't want it sitting out there that I hadn't.
Okay. I think when you use the phrase, Jason, of an operating deficit,
yeah.
So projecting a certain gap in revenues and for this year and not assuming we have to cut 100% of that gap in this year basically means we're using some fund balance. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably likely you are going to have a shortfall this year. In terms of the operating, you're probably going to have an operating deficit. And unfortunately, it's probably a reality. Obviously, our goal is to strive to minimize that. I mean, if you wanted to take drastic, and I wouldn't recommend this, which is why we did. If you really wanted to take drastic action and really curtail that right now, there's a lot more we can do to really narrow that down. I would be hesitant to make those decisions or recommendations right now. I think what we're talking about doing is appropriate for what we know today, and it allows you to make more decisions in the future. I also think that it's enough of the right move right now. I don't think it's falling short on what we should be doing. Like I said, we can always make more drastic decisions. If you say, Jason, this isn't enough, we want to cut that down now, we can talk about why that, what we would do to do that. I don't know
that that would be the right decision right now. Trust me, I don't like looking at the fact that you might have an operating deficit, but there's also a shock to the system of making too drastic of a decision too early in the process. So I think this is fair, it's reasonable, it's calculated, and it's manageable. If things spiral out of control and it just gets worse, then we're going to have to speed up that decision. I don't know how else to explain it. I know exactly what you're saying, Rich, and I think you're riding that line right now as to being balanced in making those decisions. Like I said, if you wanted to protect the fund balance even more, you wanted more assurances that you're really ratcheting things back, we could do some more things. I don't know that I would recommend it right now.
Still done? Okay. Henry and then Deborah.
Yes, I know when we go into executive session, we often say that we plan on taking no action. What are we anticipating after finishing executive session today?
No action.
Okay, action.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Deborah?
I just wanted to follow up on what Rich said. Now, I think we are probably eventually going to have to use fund balance for some of this. I don't want to even consider doing it now, though, because we don't know how bad it's going to get. And maybe one of the things we ought to be thinking about is if we decide we're going to use some of fund balance, we need to set a limit on how much of it we would use.
If I understand right, Jason and Rick, it's not like we would decide to allocate fund balance. It's that we would operate through June and July and September and October, understanding that our expenses are greater than our revenues. And by the end of the year, we settle up by paying out of the fund balance.
Yeah, I mean, generally, that's what's going to – this is why part of the monitoring process month to month is going to be important to see if revenues are falling. I mean, it's a whole other exercise that we generally don't monitor that closely. But, I mean, you can appropriate fund balance now. I think it's premature to do that. Essentially, you would accept the level of operating deficits that you would end up doing. Knowing that you're going to – this year, you're going to fall short and you're not going to have growth in fund balance. You're going to have just the opposite. So I think all these are good questions. I just think it's too early to make a decision as to what's a manageable, what's manageable, what's not, what's acceptable or not. And you're going to have plenty of time to make more decisions in the upcoming months.
No, I agree with that. I'm just saying, as we watch this process unfold, I mean, at some point we're going to have to say, okay, this is getting really bad. We're going to have to take more drastic action or accept the fact that we're going to have to dip into fund balance up to a certain amount.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so many unknowns still, as we keep saying. But I think what I'm hearing and would reflect back to staff is that these people who have spoken aren't shy about spending down the fund balance rather than cutting too far to the bone. And I think, so that's a sort of a general, I'm going to summarize that and raise your hand if you disagree. I see Henry's hand already. Deborah's hand. But just as a general attitude about how we're approaching this. But I think until we have real numbers, until we know, okay, this is what this proposal looks like, and here are the costs, sort of the disadvantages of it. Right now, it's theoretical. So, Henry and then Deborah.
Rick, do we know what the financial people are saying about what's going to happen with the bond, with the ratings, credit ratings?
Yeah, I keep in touch with them at least once a week, and because we do have an issue scheduled for sale for late June, they've been giving us information back and forth on which ones have been successful, which ones have not been. It's not like the market has ceased to exist. It's just that they had some difficulty in the municipal offerings over the last 6 weeks, of course. Markets are kind of squirrely, and I haven't got a report from them this week, but we do keep in touch with them on a weekly basis since we've been moving this next note issuance forward over the last 60 to 90 days.
But how would spending part of our fund balance, going down, how would it affect our ratings?
Well, are you talking about this particular $3 million note? No, you're talking about spending $6 or $7 or $8 million. Yes. Obviously, that's a negative impact on our, you know, but it's just a number of factors, or it's just a number of points that they look at when they establish credit ratings. They also look at the overall market and what it's doing. And so when everybody is in the same boat, so to speak, which is like when they put out a GASB pronouncement that affects every county in the country negatively, it doesn't impact us negatively because we're still on par with all other counties across the country or counties within New York State. So, yes, in general, in a very generic way, use of fund balance tends to be a negative mark against your credit rating. But, you know, we've gone over that many, many times here as a group, but the whole legislative group, because there are so many other factors that help establish our rating.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Deborah, did you have your actual hand up instead of your blue hand? No. Okay. Dan, was there somebody else?
Yes, I have two questions actually now. So, are we saying that we're in general we end up at 6 million?
The idea that we're probably going to go $7 million into our fund balance this year.
No. What was the beginning of your question, Dan? I didn't hear.
My question was, if we accept tonight's premises, is it with the understanding that we are going to use $7 million of our fund balance this year?
No. I would not. Can I answer that?
Yeah, please.
No, I don't. This was not, this is not, tonight was not about to get consensus about what's a reasonable or acceptable level of fund balance to utilize, only because you can't answer that question right now. And it's really, this is more about a snapshot of the circumstances we know today. This situation could get worse. And if it gets worse, we might have to take more actions to do that. So I don't think it would be a good idea for the legislature to say, yeah, we think that's an acceptable level. I don't think you have enough information to determine that. And like I said, over the course of the next several months, we'll know more information, and we'll determine as to whether or not more actions need to be taken in different ways in order to determine what this operating deficit may be like, to what extent it might be like, and then from that point you'll be able to make better decisions. So I don't think you want to come out of this saying that's an acceptable range, because right now the goal is to have none, but it's not to totally sacrifice everything that you do to get there. There's a balance of operations, there's a balance of service delivery, and there's a balance of what the foresight next year will be and how much fund balance you may actually have to end up using.
Well, I understand that things can change, but aren't we saying that if tonight's projections were correct, we would end up with a $7 million fund balance, going $7 million into the fund balance?
It's possible, yes.
Thank you. My other question is, what is the message going to go out to the public, and when? And is this information embargoed for now?
Well, we're on YouTube right now.
Thank you.
Maybe I should have told everybody that at the beginning. I mean, that was the point of opening as an expanded budget committee meeting, and I think Kathy communicated that to all of us earlier.
I have one question about Martha.
Yeah.
And one statement about bond rating is that there are other things that will go into your bond rating other than fund balance. So, for example, if higher ed were not to return this fall, that will change the landscape of your local economy. That may have an impact on your buy rate, even though it has nothing, you know, it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with you or what the actions of the county government are. So major industries or fluctuations in industries can also negatively impact your buy rate.
Okay. Does we have anything else to chew around yet at this moment? Last thoughts? Okay. I'd like to propose that we take a short break before executive session. We do have to do some computer stuff, and it's already been more than 2 hours, so I'm sure everybody could take a stretch. Let me just make sure Greg Potter's on. Is yep. here. Greg, so tell us what we do. Nice cat, Deborah.
Kathy, I'm going to. You need to stop the recording on your side?
Yes, but we need a motion first, Martha. I'm going to go into executive session, and we'll shut things down.
I'll move it, Martha. We'll go into executive session, discuss real estate acquisition.
I will second it.
Real estate issue and personnel. Okay, Deborah, and second by Henry. All in favor, is that, Kathy, do you want a roll call?
Probably should, yes.
All right. Okay, I'm going to go down the list. I see Deborah Doss, yes. Dave McKenna.
Yes.
Glenn Morey.
Yes.
Shauna Black.
Yes.
Mike Sigler.
Yes.
Amanda Champion.
Yes.
Anna Kellis. Anna. Anna Kellis, you're on mute.
Okay. She probably stepped away.
Okay. Dan Klein.
Yes.
Shauna Black.
Yes.
Mike Sigler.
Yes.
Amanda Champion.
Yes.
Anna Kellis.
Yep.
Anna.
I'm here. Yes.
Anna Kellis, you're on mute.
I'm hearing an echo. Is anybody else hearing?
I'm not on mute on my end.
She said yes.
Okay. It's fine. Leila?
Yes.
This is great. Glenn Morey? Did Glenn vote yet?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Did anybody not vote?
I didn't.
I vote yes.
Henry?
I vote yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Clairborn?
Yes. Yes.
Martha?
Yes, Dave.
One quick thing. You know, Kevin and I are usually attached at the hip right now. We've been attached to the hip virtually and now more physically, but we're still keeping our 6 foot distance. Kevin was a great, as you know, as a mastermind behind a lot of this, and Lisa as well. The both together have been a great help and have really helped put this together in a very short period of time in a format that we are not used to because it's not a typical budget retreat. So yeah. I just want to thank both of them. They've spent a lot of time here the past few days trying to put this together. They did a wonderful job.
Absolutely. We are in your debt, all of you, Kevin and Lisa. I know this is the kind of stuff that doesn't get a lot of flashy headlines, but it's really, really important for all of us. And I vote yes on executive session. I think that was everybody. I think that was unanimous.
I would put my name in as saying yes as well.
And Rich, too. All right. I don't know what happened with the audio from my end, but I didn't touch anything. Okay. Let us take if we could take a 10-minute break and then come back. And then, as Henry asked, we are not planning to take any action after the executive session. So at this point, we're adjourned until executive session 10 minutes from now. Thank you all.